Here we go. Hey there, it's Larry here, Xbox Live's Major Nelson. Thank you for downloading my show. This is, what show is this? This is show number 183. I'm recording this on Sunday, July 16th, 2006, from up here in Seattle, Washington. And I must tell you right off the top, I've got some great interviews. We talk about HD DVD, a little bit more about arcade. But I'm going to just, I want to roll those interviews. And then frankly, I want to go outside because it's just so beautiful out here. It's a beautiful summer day in the Northwest. So let's just jump right into it. As I said, I've got two interviews. The first interview I'm going to roll in just a few minutes is with Kevin and Amir from the digital media division, which is a part of Microsoft that works on, well, surprisingly enough, digital media. So I'll have those guys on, and then following that, I have an interview with Greg Canessa, who many of you may or may not know is the brainchild behind Xbox Live Arcade. So Xbox Live Arcade, I was down in San Francisco earlier in this week or last week, and went to a launch party for the Xbox Live Arcade. Every Wednesday, there's going to be a new arcade title. So we talk a little bit about that and that program and some other cool stuff. But let's back up and go into HD DVD. Let me tell you how I got here and what happened. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was in the local Best Buy or Circuit City, and I was looking at the HD DVD players, and, you know, the picture is just stunning. And then, of course, you're seeing, you know, Blu-ray is buying an amazing amount of advertising to try to get their word out there, but that player has slipped, and then I think the Samsung shipped, but there's some issues over on that side. So what I wanted to do was, you know, we announced Xbox, we announced the HD DVD drive add-on at CES in January. And I wanted to, the first step of this is I wanted to get some background information, learn about the HD DVD format itself. And then in a future show, I'm going to talk about that actual device. So I figured we could use this show as kind of a laying the groundwork and the foundation for what HD DVD is all about and how it compares to Blu-ray. And I started sending some emails around and said, hey, who can talk to me about this? I really want to learn about this, you know, at least get myself educated, because the level of education you get at perhaps one of those large department stores around HD DVD is going to be remarkably different than the information I'm looking for, and most likely you, as a geek who downloaded this show, are looking for. You're looking for some really, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. And that's what I wanted to do. So I started sending some emails and came back that I was able to get a meeting with Amir and Kevin. Amir is the vice president of the Windows Digital Media Division, whose team works on HD DVD. And he's got a program manager working with him, Kevin, and Kevin worked on the interactive side of it. And so they agreed to have a meeting with me just to educate me, and I said, well, do you mind if I bring my equipment along and I'll record the meeting and make it a show? And they said, absolutely not. So I was thrilled that they were able to meet with me, and B, that they were able to let me record the meeting. So I think you guys will really enjoy this. The other thing I want to point out is if you're listening to this on your device, make sure you go back and read the specific blog post where I posted this show, because I have got a ton of links of more information around HD DVD and Blu-ray, specifically the quote unquote the format wars. So I really highly suggest that you come back, take a look at the blog posting with this show on it, and you'll see there's some great links to an AVS forum thread, to some information at Home Theater Blog, DVD Town, all over the place. So I highly recommend that. All right, so let's get into it. I had a meeting with the guys over there. I was able to record it, and here is the meeting. Here's the audio from my meeting. So I'm over here in the Windows Media Building, and I have been invited into a meeting with, I'll let you guys introduce yourself. So I have Amir.
Sure, hi. This is Amir Majidimir. I manage the Consumer Media Technology Group. In my group, we have audio-video compression technologies and the topic of this conversation, high-definition and optical formats, among other digital media.
So you're a busy man lately.
I am, yes.
So I'm going to pass the mic over to Kevin.
Hello.
Hello, Kevin.
My name's Kevin Collins. I'm a senior program manager on Amir's staff, working primarily in the DVD forum, with the specs mm-hmm. that were associated with HDVD, and in a particular area was one of the key areas of HDVD is the interactivity, a
right.
whole new feature set that's available for that format.
So I appreciate you guys inviting me over. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about just HD. Of course, obviously, the big elephant in the room is HDDVD versus Blu-ray.
Right.
And the reason I wanted to come over here, and I was kind of sniffing around in the company to find out who could I talk to, was that, and I talked about this before we started recording, is that whether we like it or not, we as gamers, we're getting pulled into the wars, you know, from Sony, who's going to be shipping their PS3 with Blu-ray, and of course, we're going to have an HDDVD add-on as an option later on this year. But I wanted to talk, if you guys could talk me through why Microsoft chose HDDVD and just a little bit about that.
Sure. I guess before that, I should tell you where we were prior to taking sides, which was, you know, strong interest in high-definition optical formats. We see a great need for that. Displays are getting higher and higher in resolution, whether it's computer monitors, which are already high definition, if you will, or, you know, typical large screen, high resolution sets getting cheaper and cheaper. People want high resolution content. Standard DVD is less than 1 megapixel in resolution. So
right.
when you think about cameras of many megapixels, your DVD is very low resolution format.
Yeah.
Sense. And there's a lot more resolution on the film, and we want to capture as much of that quality as we can deliver it to people. One day we'll be able to do that on general networking and internet delivery.
Right.
But today, those networks aren't fast enough
right.
high definition, so we got to put them on a high-capacity disk, and that's what these next-generation formats do. So initially, we became quite active on both sides, actually, both Blu-ray and HDDVD, and worked with both organizations to get our video compression technology called VC1 mm-hmm. adopted in both formats. And that really, you know, enabled those technologies to have better picture quality, but also more compatible with PC and internet standards
right.
that use VC1 and Windows Media. But as time went by, we started to get concerned about a few things on Blu-ray. Number one was viability of being able to manufacture that that disc. Blu-ray moves the recording surface very close to the top of the disc, top layer of the disc. And as you do that, it gets harder and harder to manufacture those discs with high reliability. And indeed, if you look at the marketplace today, Blu-ray has launched, but they've launched at half their capacity at 25 gigabytes. And are having difficulty ramping up to 50 gigabytes.
What's below those layers?
Sure, that's a good question. So today's DVD is actually made like a real sandwich.
Uh-huh.
A sandwich, you have two pieces of bread and the meat is in the middle.
Right.
Indeed, that's how the current DVD is made, and HDDVDs are similar. The two halves are made separately, and then they're glued together.
Okay.
And all the precious bits are in the middle of that sandwich.
Protected by
the plastic. Protected by the two layers of plastic above and below.
Okay.
Blu-ray records the bits on the surface. And then now you immediately have a problem of how do you protect that surface?
Mm-hmm.
How do you put a very thin and very smooth and even cover on it? And getting that cover to be smooth within the tolerances is very, very challenging. And that's where the production and manufacturing problems comes into play.
Okay. That's interesting. So even I never really thought about that. Even though physically they may look the same, if I were to get out a microscope, maybe they look different, or they're just the production process is totally different.
Absolutely, they're totally different. One has got a thick substrate,
right.
1.1 millimeter in case of Blu-ray, and 0.1 millimeter is the cover. The other case is 0.6 and 0.6. So the thickness is the same for both. But one of them, again, is a, you know, sort of open face sandwich versus a
So right off the bat, that to me, as somebody who just, when I drove over here, I was listening to a CD in my car, you know, I got CDs all over the back of my car.
Right.
It sounds like if I had a Blu-ray CD or a DVD that it may scratch easier.
It would. And indeed, it's funny that you mentioned CDs because it's very similar to Blu-ray. Blu-ray, in a way, it goes back to how CD was made, which is also a thick disc
right.
with the recording on one side of it. And when you do that and the bits are close to the surface, scratching becomes a big problem. So when Sony and others introduced Blu-ray in Japan, they first put it in a cartridge
right.
to protect it. And, of course, nobody wants a cartridge around their discs.
Yeah, that's like 80s technology.
Exactly. We got rid of that
school.
Once.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted it back. So then they went through a long process of trying to figure out how to protect that layer, and they've come up with different surface material to try to provide that protection. But as you try to coat the disc with a protective layer, you also contaminate it.
Mm-hmm.
So that reduces yields and number of good discs that you can get out of a production run. And that has added to the problem of you have a difficult disc, and when you try to protect it,
right.
it even becomes more difficult.
Wow, okay. So that makes sense. All right, so that's kind of one of the reasons that,
right.
that we as
right.
a company went the HDDVD.
Right.
Tell me some of the others.
The second reason was too much copy protection, believe it or not. Both Blu-ray and HDDVD share one kind of copy protection called AACS. AECS is a separate consortium that Microsoft is a founder, Sony and others are also, and some of the major studios. And our hope was that the same copy protection would apply to both, that we designed this once with good balance between consumer needs and the studio needs, and that would be the end of it. And indeed, that's what HD-DVD has. Unfortunately, Blu-ray adds another layer to that copy protection, is the belts and suspenders kind of thing,
yeah.
called BD+. And BD Plus is the system where it actually runs code from your disk that tells it how to decode and decrypt that content and play it on top of the basic protection that's provided by AECS.
So it's actually doing copy protection decoding on the fly?
On the fly. So it's got
really?
Two levels of it. It's got the base level of what AECS is, which is in both, and then it adds another layer on top of that. Now, it's optional. Not every disk will use it.
Sure.
But from implementation point of view, we were facing a situation where we had to implement two forms of copy protection. And frankly, from our point of view and that of many other content providers and other companies, AECS is sufficient. So again, it's a good balance between what customers want and what the studios want. The added complexity of another layer was an issue.
Sure.
So those were two major areas. The third one is around interactivity. Kevin will talk about that later on.
Yep.
But one of the nice features of these new formats is that you can go beyond audio and video experience to having very advanced menu systems or other applications that could actually run from these disks. And we wanted a system that was very flexible and powerful, but also simple and elegant to implement. And Blu-ray took a different route and built a very complex system.
Yeah, I'm excited. I want to talk to Kevin about that in a minute because I got a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting topic by itself. But those three things got us to move away from being neutral. I mean, we were indeed neutral for about 2 years. We shifted towards supporting HD-DVD last September.
Yep.
Together with Intel, we announced that both of us were taking a position on this. And ever since, we've been quite active with support of HD-DVD.
Tell me about some of the codecs. Are the codecs similar? I mean, the thing that makes it happen, that's the excitement around it.
Yeah, a little bit speeds and feeds there. Uncompressed video is about 1 gigabit per second in high definition. 1 gigabit per second.
So now let's talk about, because I told you about this earlier. Yeah. So we had I had someone on a few months ago who talked about HD-DVD. So we talk, or HD content. So are you talking 720p content, 1080i?
I'm talking about 1080p content.
So this is full 1080p content.
So when you scan the film in a process we call it, basically telecine transfer of the movie, when you get it in digital form, the data rate before you touch it or compress is about 1 gigabit per second.
Wow.
One movie would be 1 terabyte in capacity.
Wow.
So now we're talking disks are only 25, 30 gigabytes.
Right.
You get a sense that you have to compress the file a lot to get it to fit. So you need good compression technology. And we're talking about throwing away about 95% of the original, and the 5% has to look like the original.
Really?
So it's an impressive compression ratio. It's almost 50-to-1 compression.
Wow.
So both formats support three compression technology. The older MPEG-2, which is about a 10-year-old technology used in today's DVDs and broadcast high definition. But they also support two new advanced compression formats, one from Microsoft called VC1,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is called MPEG-4 AVC or H.264. DVD Forum conducted a codec shootout about 2.5-3 years ago to select the best codec, and they tested many compression technologies. VC1 finished number one.
Mm-hmm.
MPEG-2, believe it or not, finished number two, and AVC sort of tied with it and sometimes lost to it. But for whatever reason, they decided to pick all three.
Right.
Not just the best.
Interesting.
But also three. MPEG-2 has some reason because of backwards compatibility, so you can bring existing MPEG-2 content. So it has some use. But AVC and VC1 are really two kinds of, two advanced form of compression. Blu-ray was MPEG-2 only and stayed that way for quite some time. And they put up quite a fight in saying they didn't need advanced codecs. But eventually, they went ahead and added VC1 also and MPEG-4 AVC just the same.
So when I go into the store right now, when I go into Best Buy and I look it up and I see Blu-ray and I see some HD-DVD, are they all using different codecs and then it's up to the player to decide?
So the players have to support all three.
Understood.
No choice.
Yeah. Yep.
But the content owners can pick because they're assured that no matter which one of the three they pick,
something's
the player
gonna work.
Can play.
Yep.
And so in case of HD-DVD, all the HD-DVD studios analyzed the three choices they had. And every one of them has picked VC1.
Great.
Because it gives them the best picture quality, and frankly, we're there to work with them to make sure the absolute best quality is there.
Right.
So all the HD-DVD titles that you see in the U.S., they're all VC1 regardless of the studio. The Blu-ray titles, unfortunately, have picked MPEG-2. as I mentioned, MPEG-2 is a 10-year-old compression technology. 10 years ago, we didn't know as much about compression. We had very slow and expensive hardware, so the codec was designed to be simpler in design, so it could be implemented cheaper, nicer. 10 years ago.
Remember, 10 years ago. Which is a long time ago.
Game boxes and everything. They were very, very different world.
Yep.
Today, we have much faster, much more capable hardware. So as a result, when you use MPEG-2, you already have a deficiency. VC1 is about 2 to 3 times more efficient than MPEG-2. So for the same data rate, you can get 2 to 3 times more quality, or you can get the same quality at half the data rate.
So wait a minute. So what you're telling me is one of the keystones that people get behind Blu-ray is they say it has larger capacity.
Right.
So you're telling me, if I'm understanding correctly, that a similar content encoded on Blu-ray would be significantly larger, thus losing the reason they have larger discs.
Exactly. So if you pick MPEG-2 on Blu-ray, even its maximum capacity of 50 gigabytes, you might actually get worse quality than VC1 in a smaller HD-DVD because the compression technology is less efficient, and as a result, is wasting space.
Interesting.
Imagine putting, you know, taking your file that you want to give to a friend on a flash card and not zipping it first and giving it to them uncompressed.
Right.
You know, that wastes space.
So,
by the same token, space on Blu-ray discs today is wasted with less efficient compression technology in the choices they've made in creating their titles.
So I'm not gonna put words in your mouth. I'll say this. So to me, it sounds like they need the Blu-ray camp needs a larger disc, because they're not using the best compression.
Absolutely, and indeed, if you look at VC1 and look at what you can get in a 30 gigabyte HD-DVD, you can get 4 hours of high definition content that essentially matches the quality of the source on a 30 gigabyte disk. And frankly, most people, when you beyond 4 hours,
right,
most movies, 80% of movies are about an hour and a half.
Right.
And, you know, even a 4-hour movie, you know, will fit nicely with high fidelity, very high fidelity audio on the same disc.
So let's talk. I was just touching on the size of the discs. Right now, today, here we are, July 2006. Yeah. There's no larger Blu-ray available. Is that correct?
Correct. So Blu-ray today is only 25 gigabytes, single layer, difficult to make, even single layer. Dual layer is still in the lab, has not come out as a commercial product. HD-DVD has both 15 gigabytes and 30.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all the titles are in 30 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
So in an interesting twist, you have 30 gigabyte HD-DVD discs using advanced compression VC1.
Right.
You have Blu-ray at 25 gigabytes using less efficient compression.
Right.
The end result is that you talk to enthusiasts who've got both products, and frankly, 90% of them have returned their Blu-ray player because they noticed the image quality is just not there compared to HD-DVD.
So let's talk about there's different types of discs as well. There's the hybrid discs and the combo discs. Explain those to me as well, now that we're talking about the actual discs.
So one of the nice things about HD-DVD is that since the process is similar to regular DVD, you can make some of the layers look just like a DVD. Indeed, there's a hybrid disc format in HD-DVD that lets you have on one side of it be normal DVD and on the other side be HD-DVD. So Firewall, for example, a movie that just came out, a rumor has it, both of those are hybrid DVDs, meaning that you flip it on one side, you put it in any DVD player you have in your house today, car and Xbox,
or your
PCs,
PC, yep.
Anything will play it. Flip it on the other side and place an HD-DVD. So it lets you buy those titles today even if you don't have an HD-DVD player. So you can start buying your new titles in this compatible format. And then one day when you get an HD-DVD player, you just flip it to the other side and get 6 times the resolution. In Blu-ray, because they've completely changed the manufacturing process, there is no feasible hybrid story. They made some proposals that, frankly, have not gone anywhere, and there's no commercial reality around any hybrid solution for Blu-ray today, whereas HD-DVD titles are already in shipping today with superb quality on both sides. You get 9 gigabytes on DVD side, and you get
everyone HD-DVD. Has been saying, or the stuff that I've been reading, is it says, that Blu-ray has both Blu-ray and HD-DVD on that front are going to be equal.
They're not.
So you're saying that that's on paper, but in reality...
Again, there was a theoretical proposal by JVC for hybrid disc for Blu-ray, but JVC itself has actually produced hybrid HD-DVDs for us when we handed out those discs at CES. So they do not believe even that that can be manufactured. Difficulty is that to put a DVD process underneath the Blu-ray, when Blu-ray itself is difficult to make,
right,
when you put another process underneath it, it becomes an impossible thing to pull off.
It's really fascinating, and I made an allusion to this earlier, is that the gamers are now being pulled into this. What do you think about that, just in terms of how the gaming front is being used in this format war?
I think if you look back, there was a moment in time where Sony made a decision to sort of bundle their two assets here that they want to see succeed, which is Blu-ray and PS3.
Yep.
PS3 obviously has its own momentum. It's a product that they, you know, subsequent to PS2 they were going to come out.
Yep.
But Blu-ray was not having good success.
Right.
Difficult to make, all these challenges, and they had to play the game somehow. And literally the game that was played was, okay, if we put it in PS3,
we're going to bundle it.
Bundle it together. That way, okay, the support will come because we are bundling it that way. From our point of view, we think the two markets are certainly separate. For many customers, people play games. My children play games. That's all they play on their machines. When they want to watch DVD, I go watch it in the other room. For occasional use, some of them do want to play movies, and we will have our own Xbox option for HD DVD.
Yep.
If you want to add it on for your secondary room, wherever the other Xbox is, 360 is, and you want to watch, you know, movies occasionally on it, the option is certainly available. But you don't have to pay for the expense of a Blu-ray drive in every game console, whether you have that need or not. And these drives are expensive to make. Blue lasers are quite expensive today, far more expensive than red lasers that are commodity items. So every PS3 buyer will be paying and subsidizing the cost of Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's about choice. It's really about the choice.
Right.
The one thing that I know is the gamers that I read with all the gamer forums that I hang out on and my blog and so forth, people are kind of upset that they're being forced to have Blu-ray, even though they may not want it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you look at the pricing.
$500,
$600 pricing, and that is forced on them because the cost is so much higher. They have to take out some features from the lower-end model to try to even get down to lower cost. And frankly, even at those prices, Sony's taken huge losses on that. Those drives, again, are very expensive to manufacture. The optical pickup in a Blu-ray is very much more expensive than HD DVD because it has to focus that laser so sharply and also be able to read CDs and DVDs.
Yeah.
It makes it very compatible to build a cheap optical pickup. And the optical pickup is the laser plus the lens.
Right.
You now have two lasers, red laser and blue laser,
mm-hmm.
and they have to read at different recording depths. And that requires sometimes a two-lens system, and a two-lens system is bigger, more expensive to make. So they have their optical pickup is expensive. The discs are more expensive, drives are more expensive, the games are expensive. Now, if at the end of the day you got something better, it would be one thing.
Right.
But in an ironic twist, the best picture quality today is with HD DVD, not with Blu-ray. So you pay more and you get less in that.
Let me ask you about speed.
Sure.
Are they? Do you know off the top of your head, are they equivalent to speed? Because that's one thing in the gaming space we're concerned with is the data transfer coming off of the disc.
Right. At the video application, Blu-ray does have a faster transfer rate than HD DVD, about 10 megabits per second or so higher data rate.
Okay.
Turns out it's not needed for video applications because of the efficiency of VC1, we can encode far better picture quality with much less data rate. So it is not of direct value there. And in case of game consoles, you can take a red laser disc and spin it quite fast.
Right.
So you can get even faster performance than even Blu-ray anyway. So it has that spec, if you will, on paper, but in practice, for both video and gaming, the throughput difference is really not there from that point of view.
So we talked a lot about hardware. What I want to do is I want to turn the mic over to Kevin now just for a little bit. And I want to ask Kevin. Kevin, I spent some time earlier today playing around with the Toshiba DVD over at our test lab and just playing with some of the interactivity. And that's kind of what you work on, right?
That's right,
So tell me a little bit about how the interactivity is different for people that haven't seen the DVDs or the HD DVDs or even the Blu-rays.
Well, the first thing is there's some history behind this. The whole reason that interactivity was introduced was largely, the studios realized that to get the consumer to move to something that was compelling, there needed to be video, which Amir talked about, and then also audio, which we haven't talked about yet, and the differences between the formats and what's mandatory support for audio, and then interactivity. And they really felt that these three things were going to be something that would really compel the consumer to want to move to this format.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, if you're ever watching a DVD, one of the first things that's always frustrating, if you want to do a chapter jump, the movie stops, and you go into the chapter menu, and then you clumsily navigate through, and you do, you don't have a seamless, what we call seamless interactivity.
Right.
So one of the big things that's in HD DVD is what we call advanced content, or internally we call it IHD, is the technology around that. And with that, what you've seen is one of the things. What title were you watching?
I was watching, it was a Warner Brothers title.
Okay, so all Warner Brothers title. You hit the up arrow key,
yeah,
the menu will come
and
up
it came
on the
up.
Bottom. It's alpha blended, so you can see the movie behind it.
Yeah, it was a Keanu Reeves movie. I don't remember what that was.
Constantine,
that's okay. It. That's it, yes.
So Constantine, that's an excellent one to watch. I don't know if you saw the features, but I'll go through on
whoa, that. I did. I want you to explain it to me. Go ahead.
So the first thing that comes up on the Constantine menu, you hit the up arrow, you have the menu. It has a pause, and then it has settings where you can turn the beep off, and
yep.
Then you go over and you have scene selections. And one of the things you notice on scene selection, you can hit up, and then this is a big difference from any of the Blu-ray titles that you looked at. And there's some ironic things I want to talk about here. Is you'll see thumbnails that come across for each of the titles,
yep,
while the movie's playing.
That's the whole thing. Is the movie was playing in the background.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't have to go to a different menu and stop. I mean, it was really cool. This whole thing was happening while the movie was playing in the background. That was cool.
So on that, you can then go up and you can arrow over, and then you'll see the animation of the thumbnails for the next five chapters.
And slide over, yeah.
And keep sliding over, or you can go up and choose one of the a section of menus and go right to that and then hit it, and then boom, you go to that chapter, and
yep,
then you can do that all while the movie's moving. Now, another thing that's really nice is, you know, you look at this from, I'm sure you have a DVR like a TiVo or
yep,
something like that.
Yep.
So, you know, one of the cool things about that is you can always go in and you can see how far you are into the movie.
Yep.
You never could do that before, really, with DVD, unless you called up their options and it would tell
the
you.
The time, and you'd have to figure it out, yeah.
Exactly. Well, now you saw that little time bar on the
yeah,
bottom.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that.
So it showed you how far you're in and how
yep,
far you have left to go. And you
yep,
could, you know, eventually you could take that with a mouse and drag that
right,
to go over. If you had, if it was on a computer, you'd have the ability to do that. The other thing that's really interesting on there is if you looked off to the left, there's a thing called bookmarks.
Yeah, I saw
now,
that.
Some DVDs, you know, have that as part of a player, but what's revolutionary about this is authored into the disc now, and all HD DVD players have to support this. So for me, whenever I have people come over to my house, I'm a huge home theater buff. That's
wait a minute, before I got to ask you, what do you have at home? What kind of screen do you have? That's what all my people want to know. I'm going to ask you as well, Amir. So.
I have a StuarTech 130, 110-inch drop-down going off of Sony G7.
Oh, man. Okay.
So I'm pretty serious.
That's why people are coming to your house.
So, you know, I have top video presentation.
Yeah, clearly.
And so I have people come over and, you know, I'll show them titles. And one of the, it was always difficult. You just want to show them clips of the real compelling stuff. And, you know, it's always harder with DVD to do that because you didn't always have the same player. I play everything off of a home theater PC.
Right.
So I don't have the 2-3 cadence issues because I can just go at 72 hertz
yep,
to my CRT monitor and I get
yep,
perfect.
Yep.
You know, 24 frames per second at three blinks. So
right,
I'm pretty – it's important to me to have that. So,
yeah,
you know, I have a
as
home
it is
theater
me,
PC. So I don't have that. But, you know, now I can come in and I can – boom, I can go right to my favorite scenes, especially when demonstrating the HDVD. I can just bookmark my favorite scenes and it's stored in the persistent memory.
So tell me about – you were talking about the bookmarks and I sidetracked you. So when I set a bookmark, when I put the – I can take the disc out and put it back in?
You can put any disc in,
uh-huh,
and then put that original disc back in, and the bookmarks will remember, because every HDVD player has persistent storage. And this is these two things, just what I've talked about, are key things that are differentiating between the two formats.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because of the technology.
Right.
Sony has they have HD movie mode, and they have BDJ that will eventually come out. There's no titles that I'm aware of yet that
right,
use BDJ.
What is BDJ?
It's their Java language.
Yeah, because nothing says performance like Java. Anyway, I'm sorry. I had to get that in there.
But so regardless, if you take the argument out of which is a better
right,
technology, which we believe that IHD is a better technology
right,
to author the discs on, but
right,
let's just put that aside.
Right.
What it enables, one thing is you have persistent storage in every HDVD player. And in order to get a logo, you have persistent storage. That's
cool,
not the case with Blu-ray. So a player manufacturer can optionally choose to put this in here.
Right.
But by default, to get a Blu-ray disc logo, you do not have to have persistent storage at this point in time,
mm-hmm,
which means that content authors aren't going to author to something unless they're guaranteed that feature's in there.
Yep.
So that's one thing. And these are just some of the basic features that you have on there.
Yeah.
So you have bookmarking, also that timeline thing that
yep,
require you can't do that in HD movie mode. You
right,
can only do that in something that would be like BDJ or IHD, where you have some form of scripting or
right,
programming language where you can constantly query to see how far you are in the time code
right,
to be able to move that thing across.
Right.
So other things on there, and this is on Constantine's a great example because it's the first HDDVD title come out with this, and this is probably one of my favorite features of HDDVD in the form of that it's a mandatory feature.
Right.
If you went over to the special features way over to the far right and you clicked on that,
mm-hmm,
you saw on the bonus materials
yeah,
on
it
Constantine
was unbelievable,
filled up the entire page.
Yeah, it did.
Which goes, you know, to Amir's comment. You do that with any of the 14 BD titles that you can purchase right now. And they're nothing more or less than what they were with their DVD equivalents.
Interesting.
So you hardly any bonus content.
Yeah.
So Constantine's a great example of how much bonus content. But the key thing is there on the top part of the left, on the left side, there's this thing called in-movie experience.
I saw that.
So you click on that, and one of the first things that you notice was, boom, you had video that came up.
So just to explain to people, it's kind of like when you're playing Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter. There's that little screen with the video. It was like a little – it was picture-in-picture.
It is, and it's dual video stream. So that's the key thing I want to point out between the formats. In HDVD, you have a secondary video decoder that's mandatory. BD, you do not have a secondary video decoder that's mandatory. So you can't have these super compelling features. So what this is like a video director's commentary. Now, the first title, like Constantine, that came out is just, you know, just scratching the surface of what you can do, because they got to figure out how they can author all this and the performance issues. But you saw all of a sudden they would put a video on the bottom left that started out with the director talking about it. And then as you went in, when they're showing when he comes in to do the exorcism, they show the neighborhood that they're actually filming it on. They talk about why they wanted to have it in L.A., why they chose this particular building and flavor. So it's a much more enveloping experience.
Yeah, it wasn't like the DVDs today where you're listening to just the sound, the audio, and it's some guy yammering on. The scene that I saw, which is just what you were describing, was the window popped up, the little picture-in-picture. You know, I'm watching the beautiful, I think it was a 1080i or 1080p screen. It was beautiful. And the little screen popped up on top of the movie, and it was showing how they did the stunts I was actually watching. And I was like, that's kind of cool. And I got really sucked into this little screen.
Well, it's very enveloping. I mean, the only time I've ever watched a director's commentary before was on The Matrix.
Right.
And I followed The White Rabbit, because I was pretty revolutionary at that time to follow The White Rabbit.
Right.
So this is the first time now I watch all these. There's not Constantine's one of the first titles. Bourne Supremacy is another title that has this. Just to go take that a step further, though, there's future titles that I've already seen.
Yeah, so you've seen some stuff that hasn't even been announced yet.
We get all the check discs.
That's what I'm talking about. We should talk, because I get all the game discs, so we should talk.
So I'm in hog heaven for seeing all this stuff. But like future stuff, you'd have the ability. You know, right now you might just want to see, well, show me all the stuff where there's this interactivity or where the picture-in-picture comes up, and I don't want to see the regular movie. I just want to skip. So in the future, they'll have a thing where you can skip and go. It'll go just skip to the next part where the director's talking and you have the picture-in-picture commentary.
Yeah.
Other things that you could do in the future with that would be, let's say that there's the making of, you know, where they show the set and everything, and they have a small screen, and maybe you want to take that and switch it. So now the movie goes into the small box.
You can actually flip them.
You have that capability.
That's neat.
The authoring content hasn't come there yet.
Right.
And take this a step farther. If when John Madden used to do NFL Monday Night Football, he'd always have the telestrator on there.
Yeah, where strong white lines all over the place plays.
So right now they just have a picture of the director sitting there where they green screen him and they put something in behind him and he's in different size boxes. But totally within the specification and capabilities of doing this is I could be the director and I could be, you know, if I was watching like the weather, I could see the movie and I could walk around while they're green screening me and I could highlight stuff. And what they would do afterwards is that the director would be walking across the screen and then he could take would telestrate, and he could highlight areas of interest that are on there that even bring your attention even more than what you had on the Constantine experience.
Right.
So super compelling experience, and this is all stuff that can come up, and it's all there because every HD-DVD player is a secondary video decoder.
Interesting.
Now, the other things that were on there is you looked on there, and if you looked on the title on the far bottom right of all the Warner titles, it says, go to this website.
Right.
Right now, you notice you can't get to that particular part.
Right.
One of the other key things about HDVD is every HDVD player has a network connection in the back of it. It's a mandatory feature. Again, it's an optional feature in Blu-ray players.
Right.
Now, what this means to what the studios think of, and this is one of the big pet peeves that I've always had with DVD, is when I put that DVD in, I have to watch the stinking same trailer over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Now, they can put a trailer in there, and if I'm hooked up to the network, it can stream down a new trailer because I have mandatory persistent storage in every player.
Right.
Especially if I'm on a PC, I have unlimited amounts, and I'll bring down a new HD trailer, and it could be based off, you know, because they have the date and time, they're hooked up to the network. If it was Halloween, I could see scary Halloween trailers. Always new high-definition trailers.
Wow.
So this is stuff that will be coming out later as the, you know, because they're getting their feet wet on how to do all the authoring.
Right.
But I'm just scratching the surface on some of the really cool things that you have with interactivity that you never had in a DVD experience before. The closest thing that you had would be the whole interactual thing that you had with DVDs where you required a computer. You know, that's if anyone's experienced that, that's kind of scratching the surface of what you have, but now everyone gets to enjoy it on a consumer electronic device.
Yeah, I noticed when I was looking at, so I was using the Toshiba, which it's the only consumer player out there right now, right? The HD-DVD.
That's right.
I was playing with that, and I noticed it did have the network connectivity. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Of course, we have that on the Xbox 360, but we'll talk about that in a future show.
Well, and the networking works now. It's just none of the studios have at this. I guarantee you they will be coming out with it. But if you hooked it up, you would see that there's player updates available on the Toshiba player that come down over the network
right.
and update your player to a new rev, just like Xbox does
right.
with their service.
Yeah, so that's what we do. Yep.
It's a much more serviceable platform when you have that. One, in terms of updating content.
Right.
So that the trailers is just one thing. If you take it another step, and let's say that they put a title out, and then all of a sudden the director came and said, hey, you know, I have more time to do some more commentary, that could come down. It could stream down off the network.
Oh, wow.
And you could have this.
So people are going to get creative.
Yes. You could have new language content that would be available on the disc. The disc isn't a fixed place in time anymore like
right.
it is with the DVD.
Right.
They could sell the director's cut and sell it over the internet, and you'd have your disc on there, and it'll download to persistent storage, and boom, now you have the director's cut version. You don't have to go buy a new optical disc.
Wow.
Those are all things that are totally possible. And once you're hooked up to the network, you can change the whole experience of how that is, because everything is done in IHD is based off of three core technologies: ECMA, which is a standard.
What is ECMA?
ECMA is like the scripting language that you would use in web pages.
Okay.
So everything that we did was off web-based designs.
Okay.
You have Smile, which is the timing mechanism that you have in web-based designs to animate and have things be frame accurate.
Yep.
And then you have XML.
Which everyone knows XML, right. Of course.
So those are the three core technologies that we have in IHD that authors go to. So you don't have hiring expensive people to do jobs.
Because they're already doing it.
Yeah, you just take – all the studios took people that were doing web-based stuff, and that's who the people that are authoring this content.
That's kind of cool. That's really interesting. As I'm sitting here and you're explaining these, I'm thinking, wow, this is going to give George Lucas an opportunity to re-release the DVDs for a fifth time. Amir, I wanted to ask you a question. Tell me about the studio support. One of the things I've noticed is that it seems like a lot of studios are behind Blu-ray and maybe aren't a lot are behind HD DVD. What's going on there?
Well, today they are split. Universal, Paramount, and Warner are behind HD-DVD, and Studio Canal in Europe also behind HD-DVD.
Uh-huh.
Two of the studios, Warner and Paramount, also plan to release in Blu-ray. And, of course, on the other side you have Sony, Fox, and Disney. The key thing to think about there is that studios, for the most part, are in here to make money.
Right.
They want to sell their product.
Right.
And when they are in Blu-ray, you know, they're not exclusive that way. They've never announced that they're exclusive. You know, to the extent there's enough business to be had on
right.
HD-DVD, they will have that. We've seen this in game consoles,
absolutely,
of course, on PCs versus Macintosh.
Yep.
You know, different cell phones, different networks. The people want it, and us also, if there was going to be one format that solved the problem and did the job and everybody's
right.
happy with it, that would have been better. But we're past that time, so we're now in an era of having two formats. And I think longer-term studios will support both just the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 years from now, maybe some changes. But for now, I do think the other studios will come online. But the key thing to look at right now and see the quality and the pace of releases, HD-DVD is actually way ahead of Blu-ray. We have, you know, almost 40 titles out in HD-DVD already,
mm-hmm.
and at very rapid pace.
Mm-hmm.
Many Academy Award-winning movies, really, really top quality.
So exciting content.
Great, especially from Warner. Warner owns between 40% and 50% of the top movies of last year, for example.
Absolutely.
So people count studios, but they should really be counting on who has the best movies and the best
right.
content kind
yeah.
of thing.
Right.
And, you know, just the releases on HD-DVD have been phenomenal between Universal and Warner
mm-hmm.
on that front. So Paramount will also, of course, will come online, and we expect the other studios will eventually also come online
yep.
and supporting HD-DVD.
Yeah.
So whereas on the Sony side, the titles that frankly have come out, you know, haven't been nearly as at the level of quality as far as the story and directing
right.
and overall movie than they've been on HD-DVD so far.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I saw some of, like I say, I saw Constantine, I saw a few of the titles, mm-hmm. and the team over at the Xbox that's working on the HD-DVD player, they had a bunch of Japanese ones as well. It was pretty interesting.
Right.
So that's the studios. Tell me a little bit about the hardware side, because right now the Toshiba player's out. What other players that you're aware of that we can see?
Right. So RCA Thompson has got another player, and mm-hmm. also there's a special player that Walmart is selling. So those are all the...
Walmart's going to sell it?
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah.
We jumped the shark. It's mainstream.
It is. Really, you know, talk about mainstream. Toshiba player is a $500 player. And at $500 is a phenomenal upscaling player. So many people are just happy just playing their normal DVDs on that,
right.
On the thing. And at $500, it's really broken the threshold of many more people are interested in it. Today, there's only one Blu-ray player available from Samsung, and it's $1,000. In the fall, they will have more players, but they're even more expensive than $1,000. You know, they're $1,200 to $1,500 players. And frankly, there's not a whole lot of market out there, especially if you don't have the audio-video quality on your side.
Right.
So you're more expensive with worse quality is really, really bad formula for them for Blu-ray point of view. Of course, you know, we will also have our own Xbox 360 HD-DVD option coming out.
Well, and then
out.
Sony's going to have the PS3, yeah. which is their answer to the low end of the Blu-ray.
There's also a lot more interest generated within HD-DVD, given the great success it's had in you know, since launch. And while you know, the companies haven't announced, I can tell you a lot more consumer electronics companies are now interested in producing HD-DVD products,
right.
and they're on development of that. So I think you know, in you know, near to midterm, you will see you know, other products besides Toshiba coming to place to the market also.
So, Amir, I have to ask you, because I asked Kevin, so you're actually on AVS forums all the time,
yes.
which I love that. I love your – this is a VP that's posting on AVS forums. How cool is that? What do you have at home for an audio video
theater? Actually a Sony Ruby 1080p projector. So uh-huh. I actually have the projector from Sony. Sony does make some great products.
Yep.
Sony Ruby projector is a very nice one. I also have 1080p Samsung Plasma that just came out. That's a very nice set. And of course, for audio, I have a Lexicon, you know, balanced audio processor. That's quite
and
nice.
And you have your Xbox 360 all plugged into this?
Yes, I do. Good. Actually, I have a secondary processor that's used to route all my cables going up a standalone scale.
I can even hang out over here. You guys are hardcore.
We are. You know, it's one of those things where we have a fun job. And
yeah.
You know, the hobby is actually part of a job and vice versa. So.
Yeah, that makes it a little bit easier, doesn't it, to come
it
to work every day?
It's very nice. You know, the company buys your HD-DVD content, so it doesn't get cooler.
So I'm going to ask you guys a question. Where do you think we're going to be in? I mean, this is really we're coming into the home stretch of a really exciting time. I hate to say holiday season, but yeah. the end of this year, the end of the calendar year, with the Blu-ray, with Sony releasing the PS3 and Blu-ray and HD-DVD. Where do you think we're going to be sitting 6 or 8 months from now? Is there a place for two formats, or is this going to be as cut and dry as the Betamax VHS wars?
Most definitely two formats.
Yeah.
HD-DVD established solidly today. Phenomenal reputation, audio video quality. Again, great cheap players at $500. And the price, as we know, only goes down on these things.
Yeah.
Doesn't go up. So given that, given great reception, given a great launch for HD-DVD, it's going to be there. And we both know that Sony is not going to give up in 3 months after they launch PlayStation 3 and pull out the Blu-ray option. So given that, both of them are going to be in the marketplace in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years. Longer term, what happens is harder to predict, whether both of them become niche products and don't go to the next level and internet downloads and other things sort of take their place.
Right.
And they remain at a sort of high-end video file solution, or they become mainstream because one day you buy an $80 DVD player and it plays HD-DVDs just the same.
Right.
And then over time, studios, you know, adopt it. You got to think that studios really love these new formats because the copy protection is much more robust than what's in the DVD. So all else being equal, they like these new formats to win.
Right.
So they are going to support them better and they're going to push them. But there's no certainty in that. The only certain thing is that both of them are in the marketplace and HD-DVD has a great, you know, launch today again and great audio video quality. So it is definitely going to be there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Do you have anything else to add, Kevin, on the interactive side?
Well, not so much on the interactive, but we're talking about other players that are available. There is a different. There is another category of player, and that's the notebook. And Toshiba's had their notebook out, which is this Cosmio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that.
So, you know,
that has an HD-DVD player in it?
Yeah, it has an HD-DVD drive in it.
You've been holding back on me.
It's got a...
It just booted up. That's all right.
It's got a 17-inch screen. It'll play HDTV movies.
Yep.
And I also have an Acer 9800 that I hauled back, and I didn't. It's too big to.
Dude, I can't even be in the same room as you. You're like totally over the. I thought I was crazy with gadgets. You're off the. You're off the hook.
It's a 21-inch display.
21-inch laptop.
It's huge. It is huge.
Oh my
it's an
God.
Experience that you've never experienced. But on this, you get people have. Other options, you know, it's a dual core 2.0 gigahertz with the NVIDIA 7600 chipset on here, and it plays, it decodes back HD-DVD video.
Wow.
And, you know, it's software, so they always update the software for players to, you know, even be better performance, but it's definitely a gaming type machine that you could do with this huge screen.
That is gorgeous.
It has HDMI output on it, and, you know, you can watch HD-DVD movies. I don't have any titles with me, but.
Right.
You know, you have this and the Acer 9800 that are coming. Well, the Acer 9800 should be announced any day. We kind of announced it at WinHack in Taipei.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have – I was watching this. I was flying back to Chicago, and I watched 3/4 of Jarhead. And the amount of people that came by they're walking by the aisle and standing like, what is that guy watching?
Well, the thing is, first of all, the thing is huge.
Yeah. Well, the video quality looks spectacular on this.
Right.
For a screen like this, it's a 1920
it's a 1080p display in that size. So
so that's a portable 1080p player.
Yeah, so, I mean, see in my backpack, I haul my regular computer and then this.
Yeah, just in case you want to break out Jarhead.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a lot of capabilities on that. The last thing I wanted to talk about was just, you know, for me, one of the things that's equally impressive that dropped my jaw when I first saw, the first thing I saw was Batman Begins back in December. We had a check disc, and we're doing a big CES event launch.
That's right. I remember
And I saw Batman Begins, and I saw stuff on there that I had never seen before.
The black levels were really...
Well, for just the black level is one thing, and I was watching off a Sony Ruby.
Right.
I won't go into the we have shootouts at my house.
I'm sure.
But the detail that I saw. So I had a jaw dropping experience.
Right.
And I'm pretty hardcore home theater buff, and I was just amazed at the clarity and the detail.
Right.
In addition to this, though, just recently I have a Krell Pre-Pro at my house, but it doesn't have HDMI inputs. So I have Krell, but it's the older Krell that just has SPDIF.
Right.
And what people don't really realize is that SPDIF, the quality, audio sound quality that you get with HDVD, Dolby True HD, which is lossless, and DTS HD, which is lossless, are both mandatory codecs in HDVD, optional in Blu-ray. And I was at Kevin Volk's house down in Los Angeles. He's the chief technology officer for Revel Speakers, which I love Revel Speakers.
Right.
I have in my house. So
he must have a hell of a home theater.
He makes mine go to shame. He has a 10-foot widescreen versus my 110-inch drop-down screen. So. And he had all Mark Levinson gear there. And for the first time, I heard linear PCM coming out of the HDMI. And we also did an analog out, Nick comparisons. And my God, it sounded incredible. It was equally, on Phantom of the Opera, it was incredible sound. I mean, I have good speakers and good setup, all Krell amps and everything. And, you know, the difference from SPDIF, what I was used to hearing at my house, and then going to his house and seeing it in his home theater.
Right.
And we compared the difference of SPDIF versus HDMI audio and analog out. And
night and day?
It is incredible. I mean, it was is revolutionary to me, the sound quality difference, as it was when I first saw Batman Begins in high def.
Right.
That's how impressive this is. So a lot of consumers aren't going to be able to experience this because they don't have pre-pros or AVRs that can
or
take 10-foot HDMI
screens.
Or have analog. But the sound is equally something that's there that you just don't – I mean, people talk about it on SPDIF because there's a higher bit rate because they do Dolby Digital Pro on the Warner Home Video, which they're up to 1.5 megabits versus 640K with Dolby Digital. So you do hear it from the reviews, you do hear sound better, but it's nothing – compared to what you get off the analog outputs or the HDMI audio.
Wow.
So that's the third, you know, big leg that I really feel that's there for HDVD.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up now because I appreciate you guys just getting me here to explain to me exactly what it was. It was really eye-opening. Hopefully, I'm sure the listeners enjoyed it as well. So I may come back with some more questions. I want to see what you guys are rolling with, though. I want to see the Xbox 360 on these screens. But I must ask you, because I ask this of all my guests, do you have a gamer tag?
No, I do not.
What? Actually. We're going to fix that right now. I'll take care of it. How about you, Kevin? Do you want to shake? No? No, he's shaking his head. That's because you guys are watching your movies all the time. You really don't have time for gaming.
My children just hogged the Xbox.
That's all right. That's all right. So, I really appreciate Kevin, Amir. I appreciate you guys taking the time and just kind of walking me through HD-DVD. One more question before I go. You've seen them side by side, Blu-ray and HD-DVD. What is the one thing that's separating them? I mean, is it the picture? Is it this? You talked about the sound.
Literally, one is like life, and the other one looks digital and artificial. And HD-DVD, it just literally is the best picture you've ever seen in your life. It is better than any broadcast high definition. It's better than any high definition, any kind of video you've ever seen in your home. Whereas Blu-ray is not.
So
it actually loses to some broadcast.
So that's one thing I want to, and I know it's still going to wrap it up, but I'm going to ask you this final question, is that I actually, you know, I have a high def at home, I have a nice tube, I have, you know, I'm watching Discovery Channel and all those, you know, in HD 1 and 2 and whatnot. So you're telling me that the HD is better?
Oh, it blows it away.
I mean, I was impressed today, but I was like, wow.
It blows it away. Every time you watch broadcast, watch high motion sequences when the camera pans, you see compression artifacts.
Yep.
You'll see none of that with HDTV. The picture quality stays at the maximum quality all the time. Also, in broadcast, they use a technique called temporal filtering where you smear the detail in the picture to make it easier to compress
right.
to avoid some of those artifacts. None of that exists in HD-DVD. All the resolution of the source is there. Even things like film grain, film noise, yeah, looks realistic. You think you're watching the original emulsion in your home.
Yeah.
It's an incredible experience. The first time you watch it, it's just you know, we're used to watching it and looking at the masters.
Right.
Just never seen in our homes this way. And that's why you hear the excitement from Kevin and I that all this right. is just in a different class.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wow. Told you it was pretty intense. What did you think of the home theater setups that those guys had? I mean, these are the hardcore guys. But more importantly, what did you think of the HD-DVD information? It's interesting how when you talk to, you know, obviously there's a slant here because these guys work at Microsoft and I work at Microsoft, but they're also very educated, and Amir is pretty is pretty honest and pretty truthful, as well as Kevin. So there you go. That's the information. I got it straight from the horse's mouth. These are the guys that are working directly on HD-DVD, and it was great that they were able to give me some time and allow me to come over and record that. So thank you guys, and I'm sure there's going to be a ton of questions that you guys will come up with, and I'll see if I can get Amir or Kevin to at least respond to them to me so that I can post them, or they may even come up and post them themselves. What do I know? All right, so we're going to segue into the second part of the show, which is about Xbox Live Arcade. And the reason is, feels like we've been doing a lot of talking about this lately. A couple weeks ago, I had Ross on, and right now I've got Greg Canessa, basically an interview I did with Greg Canessa. And the reason is on Tuesday night last week, we announced the Summer of Xbox Live Arcade. I think that's what it's called. Basically meaning we'll release a new Xbox Live Arcade title every Wednesday for, you know, a certain number of weeks. And we've given you the names and the titles. So I happened to grab Greg, and I said, why don't you come over and let's do another show. Let's talk about it. So here you go. All right, in my office is gamertag Silver Surfer, better known off of Xbox Live as Greg Canessa. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how you doing, Major?
Good. So you and I just got back from San Francisco for the big Xbox Live Arcade, Wednesday Arcade. So what the hell is it called?
Xbox Live Arcade Wednesdays.
That's it. Okay. So I had your we had your speech up earlier in the week, or actually a few days ago, for I put that up for people to download. So let's go through what this announcement means and what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, we're happy to announce Xbox Live Arcade Wednesdays, and really, you know, one of the major things I wanted to talk to your community about is that we actually are doing this in direct response to your community.
Right.
And we've been listening to your community, and we've been listening to what people have been saying all over the place about Xbox Live Arcade. They love it. They've wanted more and more games, but they've said, well, you know, when are you going to release more games, and why don't you give us some advance heads up? Why right. can't you give us some release dates on some titles?
Right, and you know that a lot of publishers have gone out and given release dates, and it's caused some angst.
Yep,
absolutely. It's been difficult. So I know that you guys have worked really hard to make sure that we can deliver on these dates.
That's right. That's right.
So that's also pretty significant.
That's right. And you know, that's part of the reason why we've been a little bit of a drought over the last couple months on Xbox Live Arcade has really been the fact that we've been working pretty much in secret for a number of months on this.
You guys
Xbox
went dark.
Live Arcade Wednesdays. We did go dark for a little bit. Well, we had Uno out there.
Right.
Uno in the E3
timeframe.
Well,
and let's be clear. Uno is... I mean, you mentioned this down in San Francisco. It's like the fastest selling arcade game, or what did you call it?
It is. It's the fastest selling arcade game in our short history.
Right.
We sold six figures of that product sold through in 2 weeks.
Right. So that means that people that downloaded it downloaded the demo and said, you know what, I like this, I'm going to buy it.
That's right. Over 50% of people converted actually on
wow.
that title. So yeah, that's the download to purchase conversion rate. It's about 50.6%. So
right.
so that's unheard of. That's about 50 times the industry average. So.
Right. And I had Ross in here a few weeks ago. We were
uh-huh.
talking about
yep.
why Uno? Why do we think that people are so attached to Uno?
I think it's a couple of reasons. I think first of all, it's a brand that we all know and love, the one we grew up with.
Right.
I think it's quick, simple, fun play.
Yeah.
Hop in, hop out. I think it doesn't require 100% of your mental horsepower or your
right.
mental CPU.
Right.
So you can have a nice conversation, you know, with your friends and hang out and just play a quick game of Uno. And it's it's, you know, it's priced right. You know, it's $5. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
You can't
go
wrong.
It's less than a deck of Uno cards.
That's true. So the Xbox Live Arcade Wednesdays, let's talk about those titles. So we released Frogger this past week.
Right. So what we're doing, real quick to finish off what we were talking about earlier, is we're moving to a regular release schedule. So in response to the, you know, the needs, wants, and desires of the community, we're going to move to a regular release schedule, releasing arcade games on Wednesdays from now on. So when we release a new arcade game, it'll be on a Wednesday. It's at 0800 GMT,
right?
Which is about, I think it's midnight, 1 a.m.
depending
Pacific
upon
time,
if there's daylight savings time.
Right, depending on if there's daylight savings time. So 3 or 4 a.m. on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And so we'll be releasing one release. Now, we're also increasing the volume of arcade releases significantly. So we're giving guidance that, you know, we're targeting 30 titles by end of summer, 50 by end of the calendar year.
50 by the end of the year.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
So, and we've announced 5 titles. So our next 5 are, we've announced.
Right.
So
let's go through those.
So the first one is Frogger, which actually released,
which is, you know, there
yesterday. It's up there now.
A few days ago.
Went up, I guess that would be a couple, few days ago, right?
Last week.
Three, 4 days ago now.
Yep.
And that one released, That one released at 0800 GMT on Wednesday, I think it was. So that one is Frogger. It's our first title from Konami.
And I must stop for a second. A lot of people say, well, why are you talking in GMT? Because actually, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but I do because I sit on that team. All of our servers are based on GMT, so that's why we have to think in GMT.
Ah, okay.
So that's there's
I actually didn't know that.
You didn't? Yeah, that's why all of our servers were around the world. Not that all the servers are in GMT, but they're all based on that time, so it allows us to understand it. So there you go. Anyway. So
you know what it does is it enables us to have a worldwide release on the same day.
That's right, because you know when it releases, Wednesday is Wednesday everywhere.
That's right,
which is cool.
Whether you're in Japan or the United States or Europe or anywhere in between, you definitely got it on the same day. So Frogger's the first one, first title with Konami. Title's looking beautiful. It includes graphical up-resing, so enhancements to high def. Also includes full Xbox Live multiplayer play, co-op or competitive. And leaderboards and achievements, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that title's priced at 400 points.
Mm-hmm.
So really excited about that. The title launched on Wednesday, and in the first day, knocked the doors off. It's already doing incredibly well.
But I have to remember, when you and I flew back together on the airplane, we'll talk about that at the end of this show, but you and I flew back together, I remember it made the front page of the USA Today Life section. The announcement. I mean, it was everywhere.
It did. Our Xbox Live Arcade Wednesdays has really resonated with everyone, and it's been frankly amazing. We were in, you know, just a result of the party we had on Tuesday night, and
which was really cool.
It
was cool. Amazing. It was small. There was just about 100 people there. It was fun.
It was totally swank meets retro.
Yeah.
Although,
I don't know if I told you this, but the people who read my blog and probably listen to my show, I got a lot of crap from my shirt that I was wearing.
I thought you were definitely bringing it.
I was trying to be retro, and I got destroyed in the community for that.
I think you were down with it.
Anyway, so Frogger's out. So let's go through some of the titles.
So Frogger's out,
and you're talking about some of the features.
So yeah, so that title's doing really well. So the next title is Cloning Clyde, which is I'm particularly excited about. This is a title from Wahoo Studios slash Ninja Bee, coming out. It's an original indie developed title, originally developed for Xbox Live Arcade. And it's a side-scrolling platformer title.
Mm-hmm.
Looks amazing.
Yeah.
Totally quirky, irreverent humor, innovative gameplay. And it's got both single-player and it's got multiplayer over live as well.
That's cool.
So that title will be at 800 points.
Okay.
So that one's lined up for next Wednesday. The Wednesday following that, on the 26th, so that was the 19th for Cloning Clyde. The 26th is going to be... Galaga,
right?
Our first title from Namco.
Yep.
And of course, another classic retro title that we all know and love.
Yeah, of course. How could you not know that?
That title has got that one has got Xbox Live achievements and leaderboard support. Doesn't have multiplayer play. That doesn't really.
When you say live achievements, so they all have achievements.
They all have achievements and gamer score.
Right.
And this one has graphical enhancements in terms of the letterboxing on the left and right sides of the screen, and the menus and such have all been enhanced. But it's classic Galaga play.
Okay.
You know, some of these old school games, you know, like Galaga, multiplayer consisted of you play, you die, I play, I die, you play, you die. It was like swap off.
Right.
And so for those games, it didn't really make that much sense to do live multiplayer. It was more of a... You know, we're going to do it if it makes sense. So in those, we just went with the classic single-player gameplay. That's on the 26th. That one will be 400 points.
Right. I'm sorry. I'm laughing at you because you're like waving the mic all over the place. People are going to be listening to this going, why can't I hear him? So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. That's my Italian heritage. I tend to talk with my hands.
That's
even
okay.
When I have a mic in my hand. So then on August 2nd, we actually are releasing.
Oh, boy. August 2nd.
Long-awaited release of Street Fighter II Hyper Fighting from
Capcom.
Have
we announced how much that's going to cost yet?
We have. Actually, okay. We announced on Tuesday at the event.
Okay, how much is that?
That it will be 800 points.
800
so
points.
So 800
okay.
points for the title.
Yep.
And it's. It's, you know, the title. I know we've talked about this one in previous podcasts. So single player, multiplayer. Thank you to the community for hanging out with us. I know it's been difficult and challenging because the title's been taken a little longer to develop for Capcom to develop than anyone would have liked. But they've been putting the extra time. We've been partnering with them very closely to put the extra time in the title, get it to a state where the multiplayer play over live is really good.
Right.
The quarter match, you know, where you can play four players at once.
Yep.
Or four players swapped off in the same room with spectator mode.
Mm-hmm.
That's looking really good. The game is looking pretty good from a lag standpoint. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that that game was a quality experience with the least amount of lag we possibly could get it with Capcom.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to announce it finally has a release date. It is in certification right now. It's actually looking good.
So it's got plenty of time. We're 3 or 4 weeks away.
Yep, good. Exactly. So it's looking good for the August 2nd date.
Right.
We're confident about that. And then the final title that we've announced a specific release date for is Pac-Man to round out the Xbox Live Arcade Wednesday.
Pac-Man's bringing up the rear.
Pac-Man's bringing up the rear, but by no means is it second fiddle to the other titles. You know, Pac-Man is our second title. Will be our second title from Namco.
Right.
That one also has the graphical enhancements to the sidebars on the menus, as well as leaderboards and achievements. That's a single player title.
Yep.
That one will be 400 points. So, you know, we're super excited to have Pac-Man, perennial gameplay. I mean, it's just always been fun, and it's going to be great to have on arcade.
So what are the features that they're going to have in Pac-Man? Is there going to be co-op, or?
That one is actually just single player,
okay.
Yeah. And that one is because, you know, it was typical swap-off.
This doesn't really make any sense.
No way to make two-player simultaneous Pac-Man. That doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
So we're doing that, and then we've got a wave of titles after that, so could one
expect something? You said that we're going to release them when they release. They'll release on a Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't even looked at the schedule yet because no one allows me to see that. But is that mean that we're going to expect one the Wednesday after Pac-Man? We just haven't announced anything.
So we haven't announced it yet, but that is the idea, is for us to release titles on a regular basis every week,
right,
if possible. Now, we're not absolutely 100% committing to the community that every single Wednesday there will be a title there.
Right.
There may be a week that we skip and then a week where we do two titles in a week, for instance.
So there could be a two-title day.
There could be a two-title day, if it makes sense. But we are increasing the volume of arcade titles drastically, mm-hmm. and we are going to a regular release schedule on these titles. So, yes. Yeah, so I hope to mm-hmm. have a title, and we haven't talked about it specifically about what those titles will be,
right.
but a title on, you know, the 16th of August, the 23rd of August, the 30th of August, the 5th of September,
keep going,
and so
keep,
forth,
right. et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera, all on Wednesday.
Right.
And we've got some pretty pretty exciting titles lined up.
I don't know if you heard this, but I was talking with the guys that were working at the event, and they said so for those of you that didn't go to the event, you probably saw the pictures up on Flickr. But we had, how many stations did we have set up? Like 20 or 30?
Yeah, we had about 25 stations.
Right, so people could go up and they could go into the dashboard and go into Xbox Live Arcade and decide what game they wanted to play. And we had them all pre-set up with all of the titles, Frogger, all the ones you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. They told me by the end of the night people had gone in and basically all the games were playing Street Fighter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's pretty outrageous. So people are really
excited. 80% of the kiosks were
Street Fighter.
Were all Street Fighter.
I mean, all the other games are great, but people had just wanted to do a little head-to-head action.
And it clearly got the loudest cheers. I know you mentioned that you put my speech up on there, and you could hear everyone in the background roaring with Street Fighter.
And the ones who weren't clapping were drinking.
I just think exactly. Well, and there was quite a bit of that going on. You know, I think that there's just something special about Street Fighter. I think part of it is people are excited to play over live, but part of it is just the classic Street Fighter single-player gameplay and going through and getting through all the different boss characters and stuff. And it's just an awesome, awesome game, and it's one we all grew up with. I mean, in our generation, it was just sort of the perennial favorite. So it's one of my favorite titles.
Oh, yeah. It was phenomenal. So, you know, I had Ross in here a couple weeks ago, and he's the portfolio manager.
Exactly.
What exactly do you do relative to him?
Right. So I run the overall arcade organization. Right.
Well, this was
so.
Your baby. We talked about this.
Right. Exactly.
This was so. you are the granddaddy of Xbox Live Arcade.
and I, you know, it's been a, I talked about on Tuesday night. I'm probably one of the top 10 coolest jobs in the country, I think.
Right. Right, of course.
In that, you know, getting to run the arcade organization and you know, being able to manage an extremely talented team of individuals and right. doing something that, you know, I think has changed the industry somewhat, has been, you know, thankfully due to your, you know, the support from your community yeah. And others has really, really resonated with folks and scaling it, you know, growing it, you know, a new business and being able to provide these classic games and these new original games, opening the platform up to independent development has been a key principle of mine, a key tenet of the vision right. behind Arcade. It's enormously gratifying to actually see it all come together. So
it was very interesting because a lot of people forget, you know, a year ago there was the original Xbox Live Arcade on the mm-hmm. original Xbox. But I mean, a year ago we didn't have this ability of just clicking in without a disc and going into your dashboard. I mean, it's amazing how far we've come in what, 8 months.
Absolutely. And yeah. and it's really, you know, it's due in no small part to, you know, and I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, yeah. but I've got a very talented team. I yeah. mean, you know, Ross is a great member of my team. I yep. mean, he knows a ton about games.
Yeah, did he find Load Runner yet? I know he's working on it.
I know. No comment on that.
Okay, what is your favorite game? What is your that you want to see on Arcade? I think I have asked you this before.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. You know, I have a number of favorites. It's kind of like picking a favorite child.
But, yeah.
You know, I grew up with Street Fighter. Street Fighter is going to be a big milestone for me.
Right.
Texas Hold'em Poker. I play a lot of poker. Right. So
and that's coming out too.
That's coming out. Yeah. So that's going to be a big milestone. One of the coolest things about my job, frankly, is that in getting to run Arcade and running the overall business is that I kind of get to editorially pick a little bit to make sure a couple understood. Of my favorite games
right.
are in the mix.
Understood.
So that happened with Joust. Joust was one of my favorite games growing up, and
right.
we made sure that Joust was part of the launch portfolio.
Right. Well done.
You know, I'd like to see there's a lot of classic games, you know, that I'd like to see on there going forward. I'd love to see, you know, some of the classic first-person shooters potentially right. someday. I'd like to see, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of classic games. I would tip my hand a little bit if I identified
That's fine.
Some of these.
But you've got just by the end of the year, you're gonna have 50+ games.
50+ games, exactly. And some of my favorites are in that mix. So
that's good to know. Wow,
definitely.
So what else? So you're working on this great stuff. Could it possibly be the fall arcade? You know, could it be that we have another party to announce some other titles going out, or do you think we'll get into the regular situation where we can announce the dates? I mean, I know that was a big deal. Announcing yeah. dates. And do you feel good about that?
I do.
Yeah.
And I think that's really one of the main benefits from this new program yeah. that we've got with Arcade Wednesdays is we're moving to that regular release schedule. We want to give people the heads up. We want to get out of this business of, oh, guess what? New arcade game went up and all of a sudden there's just, you know, all these websites and blogs and, right. and podcasts like, oh, did you know arcade game went up 2 days ago? I mean, that's not the right way to do this.
Right.
The right way to do it is to be able to bring some predictability into the schedule, right. be able to publish a schedule in advance, give it to you,
right.
Give it to, you know, Krista and the great team yeah. that's working on Xbox.com,
yeah.
give people some heads up. I don't know how much of a heads up we'll be able to give. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
my goal is a month.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is that I talked about this on my show last week, is that developing video games is like making sausage. You kind of don't want to see it getting. You just want to enjoy the end yeah. result, and because there's a lot of things that are going
true.
On, and you know, dates slip and things move around, and you know, it's complex.
It is, and you know, one of the things about arcade development specifically is, you know, unlike a retail traditional, you know, Xbox 360 game that's 3 years in development,
right.
With a team of 100, 150, 200 people,
and millions of dollars
and
in
millions
development
of dollars
costs.
In development costs, where they kind of know a ways out, like when the title is going to ship.
Right.
These are 3 month, 4 month development cycle. You know, $100,000, $200,000,
which
games.
Is cheap.
You know, which is totally cheap, and a team of 3 to 5 people making them in
right.
most cases. So the variance on slippage
yeah.
is really, really high. So for the indie developers, estimating when their game is going to come out. We don't really know for sure until we see the game is really coming together and it's like almost ready to go into cert. Then we can start assigning dates to it.
Right.
And for the large publishers, it's been really an education process. They think, oh, well, you know, arcade, it's digital distribution, it's easy. So I'm just going to, I can put an arcade game up next month. Yeah. Well, no, actually not. There's actually a little bit of a science to it and there's processes you have to go through and stuff. So they're kind of recalibrating. And I think that's been part of the reason, frankly, why early on there was, you know, Street Fighters coming out in, you know, February or whatever, you know, from Capcom. That was kind of a little bit of a, you know, a lack of understanding about what it takes, the complexity of the process behind getting an arcade game going. And so we've gone through some of those growing pains, and I think we know a lot more now.
Right.
And we'll know a lot more in 6 months than we knew 6 months ago. Right. So. About how long it takes, but we're actually bringing some religion to it. We're actually getting a regular release schedule going, and we're going to be able to hopefully disseminate that out to your fan base and everyone as best we can.
Well, you guys know I've always thought that it's a great product. I still do, and you and I talked about this before we launched. I said this is going to be huge.
Yep.
And so I'm always happy.
You were an early believer.
I was. How could you not be? I mean, it made perfect sense. So I got to tell the story, and then I'm going to let you go. So
okay,
you and I were on our way back from the plane.
On the plane, right?
And I've done this before. You and I flipped up. We got our DSs.
Right.
We're playing. So we decided to play wireless DS. Yep. You were sitting in row 22. I was in row 14 on the plane.
Right.
We flip open our DSs and we played. What did we play? Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, new Super Mario.
Super Mario Brothers. You kicked my ass. You worked me.
Well, that was your first time playing.
The reason I want to tell the story is we play that for like 5 or 10 minutes, and I said, all right, I'm gonna go back and talk to Greg because I couldn't see you. So I go back and I said, here's my DS. Put a game on. What do we put on there?
Magnetica.
Yeah.
We tried Magnetica.
For some reason I'm thinking Elastica. Magnetica. Right. Mm-hmm. So we played a demo. You gave me the demo of Magnetica, and I go sit down, and you said, after you play this, let's play the multiplayer.
Right.
So I'm sitting there and I'm playing it, and I kept turning my head around to look back at you, and we're sitting on the same side of the plane, and there's these two elderly women sitting right behind me, and every time I keep spinning my head around to look at you, they would get more and more visibly nervous, because I don't know if they thought you and I were going to try some shenanigans on the airplane or what, but it was just interesting because I kept looking back trying to get your eye to say, okay, I'm ready to play multiplayer, and they were just like, so I finally ended up giving up, so I have to apologize. That's why we never played any further on that flight.
That's not a problem. I was wondering, I actually looked up a few times and I saw the back of your head, and then after a while, actually, I didn't even see the back of your head because I think you were
I fell asleep. I just want to give these poor ladies heart attacks.
Right.
I felt so bad.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
All right, so Greg, I'm going to have you on maybe another couple months, we'll talk more arcade titles.
Awesome.
Is that, you know, you can come anytime you want. We love having you on.
I appreciate that. And you know, once again, I just want to thank your community. You know, I've gotten such amazing contacts on my friends list, and I've just had so many awesome messages, you know, from different fans of yours, saying, yeah, you know, I listen to Major Nelson's podcast all the time, and you know this has been awesome. Thank you very much. I've gotten title suggestions. Of those title suggestions we've actually used.
Right.
So we actually listen to the community. This is, you know, we talked a little bit about this before, but this is not BS. We actually listen to the community, the top 10 list, the suggestions, keep them coming, because we actually use them, you know, especially as we're thinking about the retro stuff, you know, which titles to prioritize over which other titles. Yeah. It's really helpful to understand which titles your fan base and the community of Xbox Live is really excited about.
And what they can do right now is they can open up a browser, because they can go to Xbox.com, go to Silver Surfer's profile, and send them a message
message. Yep.
And tell them, this is what I want.
My friends list, unfortunately, is pretty full right now. I'm at the max, the max number. But I really appreciate the messages, and I do listen to them, and I try and reply whenever I can.
Right.
As good as I am at the typing on the on the screen.
But you can do it at Xbox.com.
I need to do more of that, because typing on the screen is kind of slow. So
All right, man. Greg, I appreciate you coming down. I'll let you get back over to your office. You're on the other side of town, right?
I am.
You drove all the way over here. So.
I drove over just for this.
Yeah. Thanks, man. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. No problem. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Greg Kinesa, Silver Surfer. Thanks, Greg. Xbox Live Arcade on your Xbox Now. You can download Frogger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think we've talked about that enough. Let's see. I think let's go into the marketplace and talk about what happened on the marketplace this week. A lot of content went up. I want to kind of do a quick little recap of that. Alright. So, let's see. There's a theme and picture pack for Battle for Middle-Earth 2, the PGR3 style pack, which is available for 400 points. You guys are aware of that. Let's see. Frogger. Of course, Frogger went up Wednesday morning. Halo 3 in the beginning, which is the behind the scenes, that is up on Marketplace. Mass Effect demo walkthrough is up. There's an NCAA 07 demo. That's available. Download that. Oblivion, the Vile Lair, is up. That's a new quest that you can add on there for 150 points. There's a demo for Battle for Middle-Earth 2. That's available as well. Trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean for some of the other regions like Belgium, Denmark, Finland, France, a few others. There's a trailer for the Gold GameSpot Gold Experience, and that was the GameSpot guys came by the party, the arcade party that we just talked about, and they basically recorded it in high def and put it up on Marketplace. And I want to talk about that for just a quick second. I get a lot of emails, a lot of people posting, say, hey, Major, why don't you put your podcasts up on Marketplace? And we've talked about that. One of the reasons is there's no way for people just to download just audio and play it. You got to download basically video. And the second one is, why don't we take some of the videos we do on Xbox.com and put them on Marketplace? And we're toying around with that. One of the issues there is that we could take any of the video and put it up on Marketplace, but it is going to look so craptacular because we make it so focused and optimized for the web that if we do a recut version, put it up on a Marketplace, it may not look so good. So we're really concerned about the quality on these pieces. That's not to say in the future we won't do it, but frankly, we really want to shoot in high def. And I got to tell you, we have a video editor that works on our team. He's just got the coolest video camera. I think it's the Panasonic P200. Is that what it's called? But this thing shoots in like every def ever. And then he has a FireWire hard drive that he wears on his body that it just basically, as he's recording, it spits it out onto the FireWire hard drive. Is that not cool or what? He's just an amazing editor. His gamer tag's Video Monkey. Off to see if he's just joined our team, but he's an amazing editor. So, all right, let's pop the notes open. Where am I? Where am I in the show? Oh, it's time to bring it home. So, time for Name the Game. And this week's Name the Game, I have a Plantronics Major Nelson headset for you, as usual, as well as Turtle Beach Air Force X2 headset. And these are fantastic headsets that that take your game audio and your Xbox Live audio and transmits it wirelessly to your headphones. So you kind of get everything in your head at once. So anyway, here's the name of the game from last week. See if you can guess this, but it's too late to guess because I already have a winner, and you'll hear about that in a second. So here's the name of the game from last week. All right. That one was of course, Over G. And I have to apologize because last week, apparently, I had an entire brain fart and actually did not give the title and name of the game. So this week, I want to make sure I give it to you. That is Over G Fighters, which is being published by Ubisoft. It's a flying game. Give that a try if you into flying games. It's kind of an interesting. It's a new take on flying games, but that's what that was. Over G Fighters, and that means we have a winner. Let me open up my notes here and see who the winner is. The winner is, his gamer tag is Tiki2, or Tiki II. That's his gamer tag. So congratulations, Tiki II. You got yourself a Plantronics Major Nelson and a Turtle Beach Air Force X2 wireless Xbox headphones, which will allow you to take your game audio and your Xbox Live audio and combine it into one headset for you. It includes a little microphone, the whole thing. So congratulations on that. That clears the deck for another Name the Game. So here's this week's audio for Name the Game. There you go. If you think you know what that is, drop me an email. My email address is major@xbox.com. major@xbox.com. In the subject line, please put name the game, colon, and then your guess. And then in the body, put your gamer tag and where you're from, because I always like to know where folks are from. That's always good to know. So if you think you know what that is, major@xbox.com. Good luck, and we'll see if you can grab yourself a Plantronics Major Nelson headset and a Turtle Beach Air Force X2 to give away, just like Tiki22 did, or Tiki II. I have to ask him what it is. Tiki II, Tiki22. All right. So this is normally the segment where I do the geeky and gadgets section, but frankly, I think after that HD DVD segment in the show that I think I'm all geeked out. Are you all geeked out? Because, gosh, it's it sure did it for me. also, what did you think of that story during Greg Kness's interview when we were trying to play and those two elderly ladies behind me? It was pretty funny. All right, I'm going to wrap the show up now. I appreciate you guys downloading this, and thank you for your time. I want to thank my friends at Centricom for all their secured and assured hosting environment. Give them a call if you need some help hosting. I also want to thank the guy who works on my blog, Lithion, who's the tech guy. He has been hard at work, got his new machine in, and he's developing and developing and developing and developing. So he and I came up with a great idea this week that I think you guys are going to like. But enough. All right, Major. Enough talking about it. Implement it already. I know. I feel the same way. So we need to do that. We need to kick development to high gear here. I'm going to wrap it up now. So thanks. This is Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, saying thank you to Amir and Kevin from the HD-DVD division of the digital media division at Microsoft. And, of course, Greg from Xbox Live Arcade Silver Surfer. I want to thank you for downloading the show. Have fun at Playfair. Send feedback, and I will talk to you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye. And now it's time for the unscripted after show. Well, actually, my show isn't scripted at all. It's just this part I just press play and record, and I just start talking. Yeah, thank you to Amir and Kevin. Those guys are great. And, of course, Greg, it's always great to have him on. In a couple weeks, I'll get someone on to talk about the HD-DVD add-on. I talked about that earlier in the show. But I really needed to get everybody level set about HD-DVD versus Blu-ray. And if you haven't seen the pictures yet, go to your local Best Buy or Circuit City or your local audio video retailer and take a look at that. What else? Yeah, it was fun down in San Francisco this week. I really want to thank everybody that came by that won tickets from my blog that came up and found me. It was great talking to all of you. Unfortunately, I don't remember all of your names, but I remember chatting with all of you. And it was just great. It was really great to see how you guys have really rallied behind this show. The blog, the Xbox 360, and everything, and I'm so glad you guys could make it. So I want to thank you for that. I'm sure we're going to be doing some other events. I've asked them if we can do some events in New York, because frankly, I really want to go back to the East Coast, to my homeland. So hopefully they'll be doing an event in New York, but I don't know if they're going to plan on that. Yeah, they just probably nod. All the PR people just kind of nodded their heads and said, "Yeah, all right." What happens is, you know, I find out about these things sometimes 24 hours or 48 hours before they happen. They're just like, all right, we're doing this. We need you to get to L.A. or to New York or San Francisco to cover it and so on and so forth. So I just never know. You know, I'm happy just to kind of do my own thing because I don't want to know what those guys are planning over there. But, boy, those PR people like to drink. Wow. Well, everybody likes to drink, right? Yeah, not just them. All right, I'm going to wrap it up now. I got to get outside. It's too nice in here. I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks. Bye-bye.